Hello and welcome to the third episode of Bull vs. Bear, a show in which we test the buy and sell cases for blue chip stocks. This week we're looking at BP, one of the largest companies in the FTSE 100 and a top income stock for thousands of private investors. I'm Alex Newman, Deputy Companies Editor at the Investors Chronicle, and I'll be putting the bear case to Simon Gergel, Fund Manager of the Merchants Trust, who I'm very happy to have here in the studio. So Simon, thanks very much for coming in today. Let's start with the bull case, which I'm going to leave to you, and why, as a manager of the Merchants Trust, you're happy to commit more than 5% of your fund to BP.
Thanks, Alex. Essentially, we see BP as a company with tremendous assets and the ability to generate significant cash flows into the medium and long term and pay a high yield, currently about 6% dividend yield. There's scope for that to grow over time as the cash flow improves, as new fields come on stream and so on. So it's really a strong income, decent income growth, interesting pool of assets and quite a diversified business, more than you might think.
So when we looked to the reset in the oil market over the last couple of years, if I was going to compare BP and Shell, which I think is a natural thing to do, I mean, you also own some of Shell stock. I would argue that Shell has done a much better job of restructuring its capital position. We've come out of the dip with BP having clung on to its dividend commendably, but quite a significant cost. And I mean, gearing, as we calculate it, which is net debt as a percentage of total equity, still looks pretty high. I mean, about 38% the last results. It seems to me, if I was going to take a bearish take on the stock, that they have bet and invested throughout the downturn on quite sharp rebound in oil prices, and pretty uncertain that's going to happen. Perhaps we'll remain range bound.
Okay, well, I wouldn't necessarily look at BP versus Shell. I mean, it's very tempting to do that because they're two of the biggest stocks in the UK. We like them both. I think in many cases, the investment case for both is very similar. There are differences. I mean, Royal Dutch Shell bought BG near the bottom of the oil price cycle. I think that was a great deal. They paid a reasonable price for an asset which was about to turn very cash positive. Shell has a bigger exposure to liquid natural gas and gas generally. And I think long term, that's very attractive. So I think Shell is a great business. I think BP is also there very strong. And I think it's wrong just to think of it versus Shell. I think it has a good place on its own. I mean, BP clearly have had to deal with very significant liabilities from the Macondo disaster, which have been ongoing. And even in 2017, they were still paying significant sums of money to settle legal cases. That gradually will reduce. And as it does, the cash flow of BP will start to come through. BP does actually, as you said, it's been investing through the downturn in new fields, and those are starting to come through now. So you've got actually stronger operating growth or stronger production growth coming through from BP's fields and from their investments. So I think it's actually in a pretty strong position going forward. Yes, it has more leverage. It has more exposure to the oil price perhaps than Shell, but they're quite similar actually financially and in terms of the investment case.
You touched on the income case before. I mean, it's one of the chief reasons anyone owns this stock. We've got to the point where I take the point, it's probably not always necessary to compare BP to Shell. One startling thing is Shell has now finished, it says, its scrip dividend program. BP still has its scrip program, but it's going to offset that, it says, with the share buyback. Can you do all at once? Does it make financial sense? It seems to me a little bit odd to have high debt and then be gearing via buybacks as well.
BP should generate between about $24, $25 billion cash generation at current oil levels, maybe even slightly lower than this. And from that, they then got to pay $15 to $16 billion of capital expenditure, which leaves around about $10 billion. And the dividend cost is $8. So they are covering that. And there's still some liabilities ongoing from the Macondo that those will reduce, but equally they will make a few disposals. So they can comfortably cover the dividend. It makes no sense for them to be issuing new shares. And that's why they've announced they're going to cover those scrip dividends by buying back the shares in the market. So yes, I think financially they can do that. And as the cash flow improves, we will be in a stronger position going forward as well.
The big if there, and Simon, I'd perhaps dispute the claims that the Macondo payments are going to come off, because so many times in the past we thought these were going to end, and then just in the last few months we've had another couple of billion added to it. So that's going to push it further down the horizon. I mean, how can you arrive at a sense of optimism that these are going to reduce?
Well, it's a very good question. They originally had 149,000 claims for the Macondo incident. Last quarter of 2017, they settled at 1,500. there's only 600 claims remaining. So the claims are very significantly coming down. They've guided that it's going to cost them about $3 billion this year, about $2 billion next, and then declining thereafter. So we are getting into, and these are still enormous numbers, don't get me wrong, but in the scale of BP, they're becoming less significant. And certainly within 2 or 3 years, they should drop out in terms of being material numbers at all.
Just to jump back, but also jump forward in chronologically to a point you made on the production profile, they had, I think, 7 major projects that came online that they were the joint venture partner or the chief operator of last year. When you compare their portfolio for the next projects they're going to be looking at, it looks ever so slightly weaker than some of their peers. Have they not baked in the growth a little too early, or is there a bit of a scarcity in their medium to long-term portfolios?
Well, they don't all come through in one go. They come through over a period of 2 or 3 years, and therefore, yes, they've had a lot coming through very recently, but that's going to continue for 2 or 3 years to continue to grow cash flow. I think thereafter, there's a question mark about how much they should be investing in new projects and how quickly they bring those on. They certainly have a lot of resources and a lot of reserves that they can exploit and they can develop. And some of their fields don't take that long to develop, particularly if they've got infrastructure in the area. So I think they have plenty of optionality going forward to make those decisions as and when they need to. And certainly the resource life goes on for many, many years into the future. But I think you would criticise the oil companies generally if they continue to plough money in to very long-term projects without too much discipline. I think that was the problem that many of them made going into the oil price decline. I think they're all being much more disciplined now about bringing on projects. And I mean, we spoke to another oil company recently, and for example, in the past, they would take a field and they would design the equipment specifically for that field to optimize the long-term cash flow from that field. Now what they're doing is taking standard production equipment they've used before, getting in there quickly, much lower cost, in some ways lower risk because they're bringing the cash flow forward. They may leave a bit of money on the table in 30 years' time from those fields, but quite frankly, the visibility of 30 years' time is quite low. So I think companies like BP, like Shell, are going to be much more clinical in the way they approach capital investment decisions. But I think BP does have plenty of investment options going forwards.
You very usefully implied a long-term bear point there, you know, for the whole oil and gas sector. The discipline with which the investment committee is already having to show when they're commissioning large projects is already sizable. Added to that, if you're going to be commissioning a 15-year field, you're not even sure whether we'll be past peak oil demand by that point. That doesn't strike me like a long-term buy and hold stock.
Well, I think when we look at the energy market, there is clearly a risk that on a 10, 15-year view, we get to peak oil and then we start to see a decline. Even if we get to peak oil in say, 10 years' time, the decline rate's going to be pretty slow. Only about 20% of oil goes into cars, which might be able to become more electric vehicles going forwards. Although, interestingly, the move away from diesel means we're going to need more petrol than we might have thought recently. But other transportation, ships, aircraft, and other uses for oil, such as petrochemicals and so on, plastics, they're not going to suddenly disappear. So we may be near to peak oil, but let's not forget that we're talking about 60% of the business today is in oil. A huge part of the business is in gas. A very large part is downstream, petrochemicals. And they've got the Castrol, the lubricants business, which is phenomenally valuable as well. So yes, there are parts of the business where you could make a case that in 15, 20 years' time, they'll be structurally in decline. That's not the end of the world. We have plenty of businesses like tobacco, which are in structural decline, which still generate huge amounts of cash and are very profitable for investors. But if that is the case, they've got other parts of the business that will continue to grow. And we see gas, natural gas and liquid natural gas growing for many decades into the future.
A couple of points there. Strategically, isn't it always very, very hard for boards and management teams to plan for the structural decline of what is currently their major cash generator, oil? And the second point on that is not the wholesale push into gas, which we've seen among many of the super majors, not just going to lead to the next glut in hydrocarbons. I mean, people are already talking about LNG being oversupplied for the next few years. Isn't that a big risk?
Well, I think if take those two points in turn, in terms of the oil fields, actually many of the oil fields that BP exploits have quite a quick production profile. So they produce quite a lot of oil in the early few years and then they decline quite quickly afterwards. So you don't really have to project 15 years into the future for some of the traditional oil wells. Actually, it's much shorter term than that, and therefore you have probably got better visibility. On gas, I think if you look around the world at energy demand, it is growing. In emerging markets, it's growing very fast. If you look at a country like China, they have enormous growing demand for gas, because partly because they want to replace very dirty coal production, which is huge in China. And so the demand for gas from places like China and other emerging markets, we see growing actually for quite a long time into the future. Yes, there's a lot of LNG, and there was certainly fears a year or two ago about LNG coming and swamping the market. There'd been no sign of that whatsoever. In fact, there's a bit of currently there's a shortage of gas because of the weather, but there's been plenty of demand to take up the gas supply. So we're actually quite confident about the long-term demand for gas.
To play devil's advocate, yeah. to continue on the sort of bear front, if you're going to look at energy demand, is there not a risk that if we're looking 10 years ahead, there is still a projection that China and other Southeast Asian countries are going to continue to grow at a clip which assumes a degree of global economic stability and order? I mean, at the same time, we seem to have this backdrop to rising geopolitical uncertainty. Can the two be married and oil and gas demand still increase?
Well, that's a very broad question, because clearly many industries are dependent on world economic growth, from finance and manufacturing, consumer goods, and energy is no different to that. The energy market does actually have the ability to rebalance quite quickly. I mean, we've seen in the last 2 or 3 years how a lower energy price, a lower oil price, has increased demand quite considerably. But if you get a drop in demand, you will get a drop in capital investment, a drop in new supply. And within a 3, 4, 5 year period, there's a natural balancing item. So yes, long term, if we're completely wrong about growth in emerging markets and that slows, then the energy demand will grow slower than we think. But I think we'll have other things to worry about if China and India and countries like that are not growing in a medium-term view. There's other sectors of the market I would be more nervous about.
Sure. So at that bare point, not even specific to BP, let alone the sector. Mm-hmm. One that's more specific to BP, perhaps, and maybe this place to conclude on, is that quite unusual legacy holding indirectly, I suppose, in Rosneft via the TNK BP business. So this is a highly leveraged state-controlled entity, which has proved a sometimes unreliable partner in the past. Is it an investment in a BP share then, not a sort of black box investment in a company which seems to be, on the face of it, a front for Russian foreign policy?
Well, they do have a stake in Rosneft, clearly. I mean, BP is a huge company, so they have many stakes in many fields in many countries of the world, which some of which politically don't necessarily meet the Western standards that we might expect in the UK and the US. But Rosneft, as a stake, is paying a high dividend. I think it paid $300 million last year. Mm. It looks like that's going to double this year to $600 or $700 million. So they're getting a financial return. They've always got a financial return from their assets in Russia. Long term, it's difficult to know exactly how that plays out. It is certainly part of the value of BP is the reserves and the potential in Russia. And it's quite hard to see how they monetize that today. But they are getting a good return from it. And so within the investment case, we're not necessarily ascribing a huge value to the Russian portfolio, but it is an asset there, and it's something we have to consider.
Excellent. Well, Simon, obviously not for me to say who won the bull versus bear head-to-head there, but thanks very, very much for coming on to discuss BP.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And for more Investors Chronicle podcasts, do go to our website, Acast or iTunes.